Good afternoon. It is 6 minutes after 12, and this is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, 91.3 KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, February 11th, 2019. Ahead this hour, Becca Martin Brown from the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette says she understands that love doesn't have to be expensive. She'll give us more than a few inexpensive ideas, free even, for Valentine's Day, or almost any day. That's ahead in our second half hour today. After today's Ozarks on NPR's Here and Now, is that artwork hanging in your living room the real thing? Maybe not. One artist says online retailers like Etsy and Amazon are an easy target for counterfeiters. We'll hear her story, plus the day's news and more. Here and Now begins at 1, right after Ozarks at Large. Do you know that place where everybody knows your name, or did you wake up this morning with a gun and your mama always said you'd be the chosen one? Can you recite the words to the theme of The Facts of Life? All of this could come in handy tonight for TV theme trivia at Black Apple Crossing in Springdale. The game will challenge your knowledge of lyrics and your ability to connect shows to songs and vice versa. The tunes start at 7 tonight at Black Apple Crossing on Emma Avenue in downtown Springdale. Places on our planet, a few, where people consistently live much longer and healthier than the rest of us. These blue zones are separated by miles: a peninsula in Costa Rica, Okinawa, Japan, Seventh-day Adventists in Loma Linda, California, and a Greek island, for example. But all of these places have things in common. Researchers have dubbed these common traits in blue zones as the Power Nine. Habits like natural exercise, waking up with a purpose, de-stressing, a plant-dominant diet, and being part of social groups that share healthy behaviors. The idea of blue zones has been rolled into a series of books, recipes, and strategies. Brothers Dan, Tony, and Nick Buettner are among the executives at Blue Zones, and dozens of cities have bought into the concepts in an effort to create healthier populations. A team from Blue Zones will be in Northwest Arkansas this week for public meetings to begin an assessment to gauge interest here in a Blue Zone concept. There will be an address from Blue Zone tomorrow night at 6 at Embassy Suites in Rogers. Last week, we talked with Nick Buettner about Blue Zones and what is necessary for a community to participate.
About 20 years ago, there was a study called the Danish Twin Study that said 80% of how long we live is determined by lifestyle factors. And if that was true, what we wanted to do at Blue Zones is find the place in the world where people are living the longest life, where they not only have the lowest rates of middle age mortality, reaching 100 at rates 10 times higher than they're doing it here in America, but I think more importantly, they do it with a fraction of the disease, because it is about that quality of life as well as the quantity of life. And that's what kind of got Dan and I started on our research.
And of course, genetics can deal you a better hand or a worse hand, but so much of it is beyond that, correct?
That's right. The capacity of the human body, the capacity of how long you and I can live is around 90 years old. Some people hit the genetic lottery and they make it to 100. But I think one of the interesting things is here in America, the average life expectancy is less than 80. So for some reason, what we're doing is we're leaving about 12 good years of life on the table here in America, and we're doing it based on our environment, more than our genetics.
I know one of the – what's interesting is the blue zones that you and your brother have studied and researched are all over the world, but they do have these commonalities that are called the Power Nine, nine things that most of the people in these areas share, whether they know it or not.
That's right. There are nine things that include their communities and their life were set up for active movement. They walked to church. They walked to their friend's house. They didn't have the urban sprawl that we tend to have in our communities. So you can live in place and you can walk and bike and get to where you need to go. They had a strong sense of purpose and they could articulate that purpose, which is actually people can articulate their purpose, live 8 years longer. on average. They had a little bit less stress. They had techniques to kind of reduce stress. When it comes to their diet, they had mostly a plant-based diet. They weren't vegetarians. They did eat meat, but it was about 95% plant-based, and their caloric intake was less than we have here in America. And the last thing I think is really important, it's where they came together as a community. They had strong families. They had they came together around faith. Out of all the people that Dan found in his research, all but one person had a strong sense of faith. And lastly, it was the social aspect and how friends and friends kind of impact our life. According to the Framingham research, if your three best friends are unhappy or smoke or drink too much, there's a 150% chance that you do as well. If you think about it, kind of our health habits actually flow through a community in the same way a virus does. You know, so if you're surrounded by friends that are reinforcing healthy behavior, it impacts our life. And those were the things that we found, the Power Nine that we found as we did our travels.
Literally, misery loves company.
Exactly.
All right. So some of these things I think people will hear and think, well, I can control diet. What you found was that folks, say, like in Guanacanas, Costa Rica, had pork four or five times a month, and it was a small sample. So diet, we can control, eat more plants. Wine at five, I can control that. I can have wine at five. move naturally, yes. Walking, gardening, things like that. But I think some people will hear this and say, well, take, for instance, purpose, have a purpose, the reason to get out of bed. That seems a little harder to grasp, a little bit more esoteric for some people, I would imagine.
That's right. It's one of those, if you think about it, if you kind of look through life, people that have that sense of purpose, that reason to get up in the morning, they feel more healthy, their energy, they kind of come together around it. It starts kind of getting into one of the challenges that we have in America around depression, for example, and the linkages between depression and purpose. With Blue Zone Project and with the community work that I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute, mm-hmm. what we try to do is partner with people like Richard Leiter, who really kind of tries to understand how can you do an asset analysis of your skills and of your strengths? How do you kind of look to really understand yourself around your values and your morals when it comes to your purpose? But most importantly, how do you, once you have that, how can you bring those things out into your life on a daily basis to be able to do them? You know, and sometimes it's one of the more interesting ones is around volunteering. People that volunteer, kind of tied to their purpose, tied to who they are actually in some ways healthier. They're both happier. They and have longer life expectancies.
So when the Blue Zones assessment starts, Blue Zone City assessment starts, if it's Spencer, Iowa, or Albert Lea, Minnesota, or the process that will begin in February in Northwest Arkansas, how does that begin?
I want to explain one other thing around Blue Zones that I think is really important. And that is, in all of our travels around the Blue Zones, I never met one person at the age 50 who said, I need to go on a Blue Zone diet so that I can live to 100 or I need to start exercising. For them, what it wasn't was this conscious thing that I need to do to live a longer life. They weren't pursuing longevity. Instead, longevity happened to them because of their environment. So what we do around Blue Zones and our Blue Zone project and what we try to bring to communities is how do we set up our environments to make that healthy choice easier? How do we come together around people and around supportive networks that are helping reinforcing healthy behaviors or breaking down isolation in communities? How do you look at the places where we work, live, and play to just create just this little bit of nudges that just make that healthy choice a little bit easier in our community, or through policies and social norms as defined by the local community that, again, create a healthier community? Now, with Blue Zone Project, we're currently in 48 communities across the country. We're coming to Northwest Arkansas in what we call kind of a two-day assessment. It allows us to go to the community. These are community-led initiatives, and do a presentation to allow your community to see, is this something that's right for you? What is Blue Zone Project, and is this something that you want? But for us and our team, it also allows us to learn about your community. It allows us to learn about your strengths, your challenges, what are some opportunities, what would a scope and sequence if we were to bring a Blue Zone Project to your community look like? What would we focus on through that process? And we do that by, again, a presentation. Your community is actually going to do a presentation for our team at ShareCare and Blue Zone Project. And then we're going to do a presentation, kind of talk about kind of how we show value and how we look at value. But then from there, we have focus groups and one-on-one meetings that people can come to where, again, we can learn about your community. We can learn about where the opportunities is, and it gives us an opportunity to talk.
I imagine for you there's a pretty big challenge because you need to hear from as many different people in a community as you can.
That's right.
You don't want a homogenous representation.
No. So after Dan and I did the initial research around the Blue Zones, they reached out to Dan, National Institute on Aging and AARP, and asked him to find community health programs around the country that was actually changing behaviors, that were fighting the chronic diseases that are killing our kids and doing it sustainable. And what he wasn't able to do was to find any in America that was successful. Hmm. He was able to find two, one in North Karelia, Finland, and one in Northern France. And through that process, what we were able to do is identify what does a community need in order to really have the impact around health. And there are things like a strong leadership team that comes together to be able to push it. If there's just two or three people in the community, or if it's just your work sites, you're probably not going to have the impact. But if you can bring together your leaders of your largest work sites and your volunteer, United Way, and other volunteers in your community, if you can bring together your elected officials, if you can bring together your schools and your superintendent and grocery stores and restaurants so that you're breaking down the silos, because there's great things happening in all the communities, but if you can break down those silos so that everybody is moving together around a common vision around health, that's where the magic starts to happen.
I'm speaking with Nick Mutner from the Blue Zones and Blue Zones Project. They will be in Northwest Arkansas soon to begin an assessment. Is cynicism something that you have to battle when you're first introducing the idea to communities?
I think that there's a lot of questions around Blue Zone Project and our approach, and that's one of the reasons why we try to come in and be very transparent with who we are and what we're doing. And then that includes, again, the presentation with the question and answer that's happening next Tuesday. It includes a partnership that we have with Gallup, where we will look at kind of how do we define value in the community and really kind of be as transparent with as possible with the community around it. But as always, we're not from your community. We're not from Northwest Arkansas. So that communities do want to kind of understand, do you really understand kind of our community? Do you really understand and can you make the difference that you do? So it's, in some ways, it's that audition. The other way, I always like to say that we're kind of assessing whether or not your community has the readiness to be successful. But in the same way, your community is auditioning us. And we're okay with that. Let's have these honest questions around what the program is and be transparent.
Is there a sort of exponential factor here that if more people in a community start to move naturally or more people start to think about how to wake up with a purpose or downshift, as it's called, to de-stress, that if a certain amount of people do it, then maybe more people do it, like ripples in water?
Yeah, or the tipping point, kind of the tipping point theory in the community. What Blue Zone projects are 3 to 5 year initiatives, where what our goal is to hit a tipping point in the community where everyone comes together around health. And it starts with all those leaders. It includes how do you look at your policies around, are your streets made to make it easy for you to walk or bike to school? Are your parks clean? Are they inviting? Are they places where people can come together to celebrate healthy activities? Or are you afraid to let your kids walk to school because of the traffic? What is your food systems in your community? Is there healthy foods? Is there healthy access? Are there food deserts in your community? So we will bring in experts to look at that along with tobacco. We will come in to look at the places where you work, live, and play. And again, try to create those healthy nudges in a certain percentage of your work sites, your restaurants, your grocery stores, in your schools. Even partnering with faith-based and other civic organizations. And lastly, what we try to do is engage a certain percentage of the population. If you can create awareness around Blue Zone Project, around what you're doing and around health, and get a certain percentage to actually to engage, to actually be active in it, you hit this tipping point where the whole community starts moving together around this common vision around health and wellness.
Even if your 80s or 90s are decades away, this isn't, I mean, it is about healthier in the future, but it's also about a healthier life and a happier life now or in the very near future.
That's right. It is actually both. One of the things I like to talk about, kind of as you talk about later in your life, is in here in America, the compression of mortality, the time between when you get sick and when you die, is about 4.5 years. It's where we spend most of our healthcare dollar in America. It's that time of our life that you need somebody to take care of you, and you're not really doing those things you want to do. In Okinawa, Japan, the compression of mortality is less than a year. So they're living their life all the way to the end doing what they want. But at the same time, if you're breaking down isolation so that you're feeling you're part of this broader group that are doing things that are aligned to your purpose and who you are, how does that impact your life in terms of today?
Nick Buettner is an executive with Blue Zones, and a team from Blue Zones will be in Northwest Arkansas tomorrow and Wednesday to begin an assessment of Northwest Arkansas as a possible Blue Zone participant. The first event is a keynote address tomorrow night at 6 at the Embassy Suites in Rogers. RSVPs for the address should be made at bluezonesproject.com/NWArkansas. Details about Wednesday events associated with the visit are available at that website. It's about 24 and a half minutes after 12. Ahead this afternoon on Ozarks, the city of Fayetteville is planning to levy a new utility fee to sustainably manage stormwater.
A lot of people may think that this is a new tax. Really, what we're talking about is a fee for service.
That story in about 10 minutes this afternoon on Ozarks at Large.
Ozarks Electric Cooperative has changed a lot in 80 years, but the mission of providing power has not. Ozarks serves more than 75,000 meters in northwest Arkansas and northeast Oklahoma, plus supply energy solutions, bringing progress to the region. Owned by those served. OzarksECC.com for more. Walton Arts Center's 10x10 Arts Series presents Michael Andrew with the Fayetteville Jazz Collective, Saturday, February 23rd at 8 p.m. This former singer and band leader at the Rainbow Room atop Rockefeller Center in New York City will pay tribute to writers of the American Songbook, including Johnny Mercer, the Gershwins, and Frank Sinatra. WaltonArtsCenter.org or 443-5600 for tickets.
This is Ozarks at Large. Northwest Arkansas-based Youth Bridge is exploring a possible merger with a Southwest Missouri-based behavioral health clinic. Youth Bridge, founded in 1963, has signed a letter of intent with Burrell Behavioral Health to investigate the benefits of a merger. The organizations would, if the merger becomes official, operate in 25 counties in Arkansas and Missouri combined. According to a press release, the two companies will conduct a period of due diligence and hope to announce an official merger in April. A bipartisan effort to strengthen ethics regulations for state legislators is receiving bipartisan support in Little Rock. Democratic State Senator Keith Ingram of West Memphis, the minority leader in the state Senate, says the proposal would address six separate issues.
We raise the fees or fines on ethics violations. We address that if you're convicted of a crime while serving in office, you will forfeit your state pension. We have prohibited PAC-to-PAC transfers. Certainly that promotes more transparency. We have limited members to only one PAC. No longer can a member have three, four, or five different PACs, sort of circumventing the spirit of the law to start with. And then we are going to prohibit a member of the legislature or the judiciary or the executive branch from being a registered lobbyist in any entity.
Senator Ingram says he thinks the legislation would be a start to restoring Arkansans' faith in state government after a year of current and former lawmakers facing charges, indictments, and guilty verdicts related to corruption. He made his comments this weekend on Talk Business and Politics with Roby Brock. He says he thinks other matters beyond the current proposal will have to be addressed as well.
I think the people of Arkansas were appalled at the judicial race last year, the outside dark money that came into our state. And as we know now more and more, we see on a global basis people trying to influence elections, and we have no clue. So I would like to think that there will be a dark money bill that will be introduced.
There is more from the conversation at talkbusiness.net. The Hispanic Women's Organization of Arkansas is launching that group's latest scholarship application period. Since 2000, the HWOA has awarded more than 400 scholarships. The goal is to increase the number of Latino students attending and graduating from colleges and universities. These scholarships are for graduating high school seniors and college students attending or planning to attend an accredited institution of higher learning. The scholarship applications are available for men and women. More information can be found at hwoa.org. Marlon Blackwell Associates is earning another national award. The Fayetteville-based firm is being recognized by the American Institute of Architects for the Shelby Farms project in Memphis. That project is part of a master plan for 4,500 acres in Memphis. Blackwell says he was inspired by past uses of the land, including a farm and park, to design the buildings that surround Hyde Park. He says the new buildings he designed share DNA with barns and silos from the past. The project, a collaboration with James Corner Field Operations, is being honored with a 2019 Honor Award from the AIA. That's the highest national award given for architecture and design. The work has also received international attention. It was the lone American finalist in the 2018 World Architecture Festival Awards Completed Buildings, Civic, and Community category. Last night's Grammy Awards broadcast on CBS included the biggest awards handed to music's biggest stars. Among the big winners, Childish Gambino. He earned awards for Song of the Year and Record of the Year. Childish Gambino, also known as Donald Glover, performed stand-up on the University of Arkansas campus in 2011, a performance that ended with Glover offering three songs after audience members requested that he rap. UATV quoted Glover at the time as saying that was the first time he had given in front of an audience what he called a little concert. Another Grammy winner this weekend will be at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art next month. Laurie Anderson earned her first ever Grammy for her collaboration with the Kronos Quartet, Landfall. The record was awarded the Grammy for Best Chamber Music Small Ensemble Performance. She's scheduled to be at Crystal Bridges on March 22nd as part of the museum's Distinguished Speaker Series. A video performance by Anderson of her song, Oh Superman, is included in the current Crystal Bridges exhibition, Men of Steel, Women of Wonder. a band that has headlined the Fayetteville Roots Festival. The Punch Brothers won the Grammy for Best Folk Album for their release, All Ashore. And a writer and journalist who was on our show more than 20 years ago while visiting the University of Arkansas, William Ferris, was awarded the Grammy for Best Album Notes for his words included in the package for Voices of Mississippi, Artists and Musicians Documented by William Ferris.
Welcome to the 100th episode of Scratching the Surface. I'm Caitlin Ahrens, the Pluto Manager with the U of A Center for Space and Planetary Science. In celebration of the 100th episode of Scratching the Surface, I'd like to talk about the Cthulhu Macula region on Pluto, a surface that is certainly making our heads scratch. Plus, it's really fun to say Cthulhu, let's be honest. Cthulhu Macula is named after the titular cosmic entity character from the world of H.P. Lovecraft. Macula is a geologic description meaning a regular dark spot. This dark spot happens to be nearly 1,860 miles long and truly the darkest area found on Pluto. One of the weird parts about it is that it's only located on the southern hemisphere of Pluto. This could give us insight into how ices evolve and condense onto the surface of Pluto during its planetary evolution and seasonal changes. The darkness is also still a bit of a mystery. It is speculated to be tholins, or a tar-like mixture of irradiated methane and nitrogen clumps on top of a huge amount of water ice, which is considered to be the base rock of Pluto. It also houses methane snow-capped mountains and really beautiful impact craters. The presence of so many craters makes us believe that this region may also be the oldest surface on Pluto, probably even billions of years old. The Pluto Lab at the Arkansas Center for Space and Planetary Science and other labs that study Pluto in the nation will hopefully combine their creative powers to study more about Cthulhu Macula. For more on the Center for Space and Planetary Science, or for more segments of Scratching the Surface, spacecenter.uark.edu.
Scratching the Surface with Caitlin Ahrens, the Pluto Manager, is a production of KUAF Public Radio in Fayetteville.
It's the 11th day of February 2019. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
You thought I was done berating our listeners, didn't you?
I never think that. I never think that.
Okay, guys, we gave you options on Friday. We gave you options for Valentine's Day. Here's one more set of options. These are all things that are free.
I like this. I like this.
You might not be able to do it on Valentine's Day.
But you can do it for free.
But you can do it next weekend, and it's all free. You can go to Crystal Bridges.
The Men of Steel and...
It's not free. It's like $10 or $12.
Unless you're a member already.
Right, unless you're a member already. Everything else at Crystal Bridges is free. You got a house. You got... grounds.
Not just a house. I mean, it's a Frank Lloyd Wright house.
Yeah.
Yes. But you got trails.
It's not just paintings.
Right.
You got a Frank Lloyd Wright house. You got beautiful grounds even this time of year. And all that's free. Then you can go down the way. You can go to the Museum of Native American History in Bentonville.
Also free.
If you've never been, you will be amazed, startled, shocked, stunned that we have this in Bentonville. Mm-hmm. It's open from 9 to 5 Monday through Saturday. I'd say 2 hours at least to go through it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's free. Then you can go to the Walmart Museum on the Square, which is also free. It's open from 8 to 9 Monday through Thursday, 8 to 10 on Friday and Saturday, noon to 9 on Sunday. And you can go to the soda fountain.
No, that's not free.
No.
Oh, you can go for free.
You can go for free.
But you don't get anything.
But you can go and have Spark ice cream, which is custom-made ice cream in the Walmart colors of blue and yellow.
That's right.
Or you can go to Rogers, to the brand-new Rogers Historical Museum.
I haven't done that yet.
It is stunning. Yeah. And if you've got little people to take with you, there's a whole kids area where they can entertain themselves so you can make a family Valentine's Day date, 10 to 5 Monday through Saturday. Or you can go to the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History, which is also completely revamped in the last couple of years. All new galleries, 10 to 5 Monday through Saturday in Springdale, also free. And right now they have an exhibit called Stand Up, Speak Out, which is photos chronicling protests in Northwest Arkansas. And they have Instruments of Faith, the Life and Work of Ed Stille.
Right.
Which is musical instruments made by this amazing Ozark artisan in Hogscald Holler. You will be stunned.
It's really cool.
And the Fort Smith Regional Art Museum is also free.
That's right.
There's no way you can mess this up, guys.
A lot of fun. Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. This is Ozarks at Large. The city of Fayetteville is planning to levy a new utility fee to sustainably manage stormwater. The new fee is part of a comprehensive stormwater plan currently under development. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich gives us the details.
Climate scientists who track extreme rainfall based on 100-year records calculate that more mega rain events are occurring in the Midwest based on stream gauge measures, with some storms dumping up to 10 inches of rain in just a few hours. And the epicenter of peak rain, according to the U.S. Geological Survey, is south central Missouri, with certain impacts in northwest Arkansas. When rain falls in urban places like Fayetteville, it runs off certain roads into dirt gullies or into curbside storm drains, dumping into concrete culverts and on into local creeks and streams. The city of Fayetteville, which covers more than 55 square miles, inhabited by more than 85,000 residents, is in need of a stormwater makeover, says city engineer Chris Brown.
We have some very hilly terrain. And then in other parts of the city, you know, especially the west part of town, it's a very different terrain, much flatter, more clay.
During flood events, water surges down mountainous sections of town, inundating low-lying areas, he says. Due to a surge of residential and commercial development over recent decades, natural drainage topography has been covered up. For now, the city spends around $1.3 million annually dealing with flooding and drainage, but that's vastly inadequate, Brown says, especially given more peak rain events, for example, in the spring of 2011, the winter of 2015, and spring of 2017. So last June, Fayetteville City Council awarded a $220,000 contract to Jacobs Engineering Group to conduct a flood management and water quality funding study, which is twofold.
One is to make a decision about what we want our level and extent of service to be. In other words, what do we want to work on as a city? What's going to be our system? Do we go all the way upstream to the very, very top of the watershed, so that first drop of water that hits the ground, is that supposed to be the city's to manage? Or do we wait until it gets to be, you know, 100 acres or something like that? So what's the, you know, at what point does the city need to start picking that up? And then other questions like, you know, how often should we be cleaning ditches and cleaning pipes? And, you know, what's that level of maintenance that people are expecting?
A needs analysis to determine the scope of services and costs were drawn up last year. A series of public meetings were also held around this city, and a survey remains posted on the city's civic engagement portal. From that, three different options have been laid out. The first is status quo, routine drainage system management, but with equitable improvements. The second option would encourage public participation in adopting stormwater management strategies. A third enhanced option is working with both private and commercial property owners to construct things like culverts and detention ponds and to establish a city streamside corridor.
The kind of the low end, what we say is kind of the minimal level of service, is probably $3 to $4 million, whereas right now we're spending $1.5 million. So we're talking about double. And those other numbers have moved around, but I think the next level is somewhere in the $7 to $8 million, and then the very high level where like we're doing everything could be $15 million or $16 million.
Maintaining Fayetteville's burgeoning stormwater system is a major expense, Brown says. 585 miles of road, 500 miles of drainage pipes, 1,500 stormwater outfalls, 12,000 manholes, and 285 detention ponds. Brown says, after recent storms, the city received hundreds of service requests from residents.
We've identified $15 million worth of sort of really big, bad problems that need to be corrected. These are major storm drain upgrades and flooding issues that we have. And basically, that's sort of a catch-up for a lot of deferred maintenance and capital that we haven't been spending over many years.
The $15 million cost is part of a much larger proposed $226 million bond referendum, a special election to be held in Fayetteville April 9th. Voters will decide to renew a 1 cent sales tax approved back in 2006 to pay for a long list of capital projects, including drainage. But to sustain stormwater management in perpetuity, the city has decided to levy a stormwater utility fee tacked onto city water bills.
We calculate this cost of service. We apply that to the number of properties we have and the amount of impervious area, and we're using that impervious area. So impervious area is basically how much roof line, pavement, et cetera, you have. So a single-family home that's got a small amount of impervious area versus, you know, a big-box retailer with a very large parking lot would have very different fee amounts.
A base fee, he says, for a small single-family home might run around $3 a month. Fayetteville will be the first city in Northwest Arkansas to levy such a charge, and only one of several cities statewide.
It's really something that's just sort of catching on. I do know that some of the other cities in Northwest Arkansas have been very interested in and ask us a lot of questions about what we're looking at. So depending on how this goes, there could be other cities that pursue it as well.
City Council, with guidance from a stormwater management subcommittee, will decide which option is best and how to structure a utility fee.
A lot of people may think that this is a new tax. Really, what we're talking about is a fee for service. Just like you're paying a water bill, you're receiving water and sewer services. In this situation, you're receiving stormwater services that now are being subsidized by other parts of the city's budget.
No timeline for the plan or fee have been set. Fayetteville's urban stormwater drains untreated through both the White and Illinois River watersheds, catching and filtering it through constructed wetlands, detention ponds, and restored riparian zones, EPA says, can help remove pollutants and sediments, improving water quality downstream. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
The online Fayetteville Stormwater Survey can be found at fayetteville-ar.gov/speakup. The New York City-based company Dorrance Dance will be on stage tomorrow night at Walton Arts Center in downtown Fayetteville. The company strives to celebrate and acknowledge tap dance in both its historical and contemporary forms. Last month, the company's founder, Michelle Dorrance, told us that tap is a malleable art form because it's a musical dance form.
So if you are dancing a cappella, you can do any rhythmic sensibility you want. You could make it feel like a hip-hop beat, you can make it feel like a big band swing. Like, you can make it feel like whatever you want. And that's what's really beautiful about being a, you know, dancer musician, that's kind of, this art form's lasted through the decades, but still feels really current and really modern.
Nicholas Young, one of the dancers with Dorrance Dance, says his love of the art form developed during his childhood in Austin, Texas. He says a company there called Austin on Tap served as inspiration.
And later on, AC Gray, who was a member of that company, who was my mentor, started a company called Tapestry Dance Company. And I started apprenticing with that company when I was 13 or 14 years old and stayed there until I moved to New York. And, you know, Gene Medler, Michelle's mentor, created an entire community and a school and a training platform and a company, a youth ensemble there that has produced literally some of the best tap dancers in the world.
Nicholas Young and Michelle Dorrance are the co-choreographers for Dorrance Dance. They say each night's performance from city to city can be just a bit different.
Our vocalist that's in the show last night, he has a solo moment in the show. And I mean, I'm not even going to tell you what he does, but by the end of his solo, every single one of us was backstage just bawling. I mean, we did both things. First, we cheered in amazement at what he was doing, and then it ended with us.
We were struck silent. Yeah.
It was just one of the most emotional experiences I've probably ever had backstage. And, yeah, that's the magic of all of those improvisational moments in the show is we can really take it in any direction we want, and the energy, you know, can really drive to push the show in another direction because we are creating the music.
Yeah.
Nicholas Young and Michelle Dorrance with Dorrance Dance talking with us last month. Dorrance Dance will be on stage at Walton Art Center tomorrow night beginning at 7. Tickets range from $30 to $85. More information can be found at waltonartcenter.org.
The Faulkner Performing Arts Center in Fayetteville presents Victor and Penny and the Loose Change Orchestra February 14th at 7:30 p.m. Featuring vocal harmonies, guitar, and a ukulele, Victor and Penny present high-energy swing-infused folk jazz with joy, humor, and musical improvisation. 575-5387 or faulkner.uark.edu for tickets and information. KUAF and Walton Arts Center is giving you the opportunity to win two tickets to the opening night performance of A Bronx Tale, February 26th. Registration for this Broadway production is available online at kuaf.com. The winner will be announced Friday, February 22nd, during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. kuaf.com for information.
And tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, women and crime, and how society views women and crime.
In neither case is she sort of acting on her own volition, right? In both cases, she's defined relationally. And I think that's a huge part of what we see in the differential treatment of men and women criminals.
And I think that's kind of an interesting thing to think about sociologically, because when we're thinking about differences between men and women and kind of how they commit crimes differently or are perceived differently as criminals, we know that women actually kind of are seen by society, by men, and even by themselves as defining themselves in relationship to men.
A preview of an Honors College signature seminar titled She Done It. And this reminder, a public preview lecture of another Honors College signature seminar, this one titled Engineering Antiquity, will take place tomorrow evening at 5:15 in Gearhart Hall Auditorium on the University of Arkansas campus. Kevin Hall, professor of engineering, will deliver that talk. It is free. It's open to the public. It will also be streamed live on the Honors College Facebook page.
Waking up can be alarming. Start your day with familiar voices bringing you news and more from around the world. Morning Edition gets you up to speed on today's most important stories and the rest of the things that make your world interesting, so you can ease into the morning well-informed. Stay on top of the world with Morning Edition from NPR News.
Morning Edition tomorrow and every weekday morning from 5 to 9 on 91.3 KUAF. And every weekday morning at 5:30 and 7:30, you can catch up on news and events in our region with Antoinette Grajeda's newscasts. And if you can't always catch up with Ozarks at Large at noon or 7 Monday through Friday, don't forget, we're available as a podcast. It's absolutely free, and it's available through services like iTunes, Stitcher, and Apple Podcasts. Plus, if you go to OzarksAtLarge.com, you can find past editions of our show. You can find past individual stories and interviews and much more. OzarksAtLarge.com.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkin Songs.
Wait here for me.
The country music duets of Conway Twitty and Loretta Lynn have become the gold standard of the genre. They won a Grammy together, as well as four Country Music Association awards, while recording a long line of classic duet songs. The pairing of Conway and Loretta reaped 5 number one hits, 14 top 10 hits, and a dozen hit country albums. And after becoming a phenomenon following their first recordings together in 1970, Twitty and Lynn would continue to chart duets through the second half of the 1970s and into the 1980s. Opening the program is From 7 Till 10, and heard here is Conway and Loretta Lynn's duet, You're the Reason Our Kids Are Ugly. They're both top 10 hits from 1978, just two of their many hits together. Twitty was born September 1st, 1933, in Friars Point, Mississippi, but he grew up across the Mississippi River in Arkansas's Phillips County port town of Helena. His given name was Harold Jenkins, and young Harold soaked up bustling Helena's many musical offerings and eventually became part of the scene. He played blues, country, and eventually became one of the region's premier early rockers in an area thick with such performers. Twitty was a talented enough baseball player to be scouted by the Philadelphia Phillies before being drafted for Korea. When he came back to civilian life, he cut his international chart topper, It's Only Make Believe. He chose the stage name Conway from the Arkansas town in Faulkner County of the same name. It was also the hometown of songwriter and Twitty's bandmate, Jack Nance. Because of his rocking background, some in the country music field were skeptical of Conway Twitty's bona fides. But ironically, Twitty became one of the genre's most successful artists, with more country music number one hits than anyone. His incredibly popular duet with Loretta Lynn only solidified his place. It was the same for Lynn. Both established themselves as country superstars in the 1970s, independently of one another. But because their duets were so convincing, many fans thought the two were actually a pair romantically as well as musically. Songs like How High Can You Build a Fire, heard here, and the 1976 number three hit The Letter, heard next and written by Twitty, didn't help dispel the myth.
Today I saw her for the first time since she left me. And she said, I got a favor to ask of you. And I said, all right, what is it? And she said, you know, you always told me if I ever needed any help, just to ask you. And that you'd help me. And I said, yeah, I remember. And she said, well, there's this fella that I've been going with, and I just found out that he's been slipping around on me. And I thought that maybe if you'd write me a letter and tell me that you miss me and that you still love me, that he might find it and he might read it, and it might make him jealous, and I might not lose him. And I said, okay, I'll write you the letter.
Dear sweetheart, just a line to let you know that I still think about you and I still love you so.
Conway Twitty and Loretta Lynn continued to score hit duet singles through the mid-1970s to the 1980s, and both continued as solo country hitmakers as well. In 1988, after nearly two decades of hit duets, the two recorded what would become their last collaboration. 5 years later, Twitty died during emergency aneurysm surgery in Missouri. Ironically, Lynn was at the same facility with her husband under hospital care as well. Conway Twitty of Helena in Phillips County died on June 5th, 1993. Here in its entirety is Conway Twitty of Helena in Phillips County with his award-winning duet partner, Loretta Lynn, and their top 10 hit from 1978, You're the Reason Our Kids Are Ugly.
You're the reason I'm a-riding around on recap tires.
And you're the reason I'm hanging our clothes outside on wharves.
And you're the reason our kids are ugly, little darling. Oh, but looks ain't everything, and money ain't everything, but I love you just the same.
Well, you're the reason I've changed to beer from soda pop.
And you're the reason I never get to go to the beauty shop.
You're the reason our kids are ugly, little darling. Oh, but looks ain't everything, and money ain't everything, but I love you just the same. I guess that we won't ever have everything we need, 'cause when we get ahead, it's got another mouth to feed.
And that's the reason that my good looks and my figure is gone.
That's the reason that I ain't got no hair to comb.
And you're the reason our kids are ugly, little darling. Well, but looks ain't everything, and money ain't everything, but I love you just the same.
Conway, why in the devil don't you go and shave and put on a clean pair of pants?
But Loretta, look at yourself. I wish you'd take them curlers out of your hair and go put on a little makeup and get out of that house coat before supper.
Huh. Well, let me tell you something, Conway. Considering everything that I went through today, I look like a movie star.
Yeah. Ruth Buzzy.
Thank you.
Besides that, all of our kids took after your part of the family anyway.
Oh, they did, huh? Well, what about the ones that's bald?
The top 10 hit from 1978, You're the Reason Our Kids Are Ugly, by Loretta Lynn and Conway Twitty of Helena and Phillips County. The award-winning country duo, It's Another Song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of Experiment Station Studios. Producer is Keith Merks. Arkansongs, since 1998.
And before we end this Monday edition of Ozarks at Large, a couple of reminders about some movie opportunities for you this week in the region. The ongoing Middle East film series at the University of Arkansas will screen the 2017 Egyptian Sheik Jackson Wednesday, February 13th. In the movie, a young cleric has a crisis of faith and identity upon the death of his idol, Michael Jackson. If you'd like to know more, the King Fahd Center for Middle East Studies on Facebook has details. And the Bella Vista Historical Museum will host an old-time movie afternoon on February 17th, starting at 2 that day. First, the epic classic Laurel and Hardy movie, Music Box, followed by two short Little Rascal movies, Wild Poses and Little Sinners. All of these are shown on an original 1940s Bell and Howell 16mm film projector and sound system. Admission is free. Period-appropriate refreshments will be served at a cost. If you'd like to know more, you can call 855-2335. This takes place at the Bella Vista Historical Museum at the corner of Highway 71 and Kingsland in Bella Vista. That's next door to the American Legion. Contributors today on Ozarks at Large included Jacqueline Froelich. Timothy Dennis mastered our show. Thanks so much to Becca Martin Brown from the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette for her participation. She'll be back Friday to give us an idea of what to expect next weekend as far as local entertainment choices. Additional content today provided by Talk Business and Politics. They'll provide some more probably tomorrow with our scheduled conversation between Roby Brock and John Brummett. Arkansongs comes to us from KUAR in Little Rock Public Radio for Little Rock and Central Arkansas. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for spending part of your rainy Monday with us. This is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas, 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and Elkins. Ozarks at Large is a production of 91.3 KUAF. We're back tomorrow at noon and 7. And don't forget, you can always find out more about us or listen to parts of our show again at ozarksatlarge.com.